This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The man the Trump administration acknowledged was mistakenly deported to a prison in El Salvador was returned to the U.S. today. The Justice Department says Kilmar Abrego-Garcia will face federal charges here after he was indicted by a grand jury in a human trafficking case dating back 9 years. ABC's Catherine Falders has more.
They did bring and facilitate the return of Abrego-Garcia back to the United States, but for an entirely different reason. Because he is facing a two-count indictment related to human trafficking charges. Now, it is worth pointing out when that investigation started. We've been reporting on this investigation for quite some time.
The CDC shows measles cases rising again in the U.S., with more than 1,168 cases stretching across 33 states. Measles cases in the nation now nearing a 30-year high. Trade talks between the U.S. and China set to resume Monday. It follows a call between President Trump and China's leader this week. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Lisa Hale. The Trump administration is scrutinizing Wisconsin's top election agency. Federal funding for voter education and poll worker training could be on the line. The U.S. Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division issued a sharp warning to the Wisconsin Elections Commission in a letter yesterday, saying that the agency is out of compliance with federal law. At issue, the DOJ says the commission lacks a proper administrative complaint process, a requirement under the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is a bipartisan body established roughly a decade ago by former Governor Scott Walker. It oversees election guidance for nearly 2,000 local clerks, and the agency does have a complaint system and investigative process in place. Any eligible Wisconsin voter can file a complaint, but the DOJ's letter suggests that may not meet federal standards. Since 2002, Wisconsin has received more than $77 million to help administer elections after HAVA, the post-2000 election law that aimed to make voting more accessible and secure. This latest federal push comes amid continued complaints over a mobile voting van used in Racine during a primary years ago. The city said the van expanded access for voters, but former Racine GOP chair Kenneth Brown disagreed and sued. The case went to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which tossed it out earlier this year. The court's liberal majority ruled that Brown wasn't personally harmed and had no standing. State Republican lawmakers are taking another swing. A new bill, backed by the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, would make it easier to sue if complaints to the Election Commission were dismissed. That proposal had a public hearing earlier this week. For Civic Media News, I'm Lisa Hale.
The Brewers face the Padres. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers host the San Diego Padres tonight at AmFam Field in Milwaukee. San Diego's Randy Vasquez against the Brewers right-hander Chad Patrick, who's 3-4 with an ERA of 2.97. Manager Pat Murphy.
Chad Patrick continues to show that he has the right stuff, meaning the right insides to pitch up here and pitch in big situations.
NBA, the Pacers with a last-second shot by Tyrese Halliburton beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 111-110 in Game 1 of the NBA Finals, Game 2 Sunday night. NFL, Aaron Rodgers agrees to a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he says he already knows the team's quarterback coach.
And the quarterback coach is actually a guy named Tom Arth. Tom Arth was in the quarterback room with me in 2006 in Green Bay in the offseason. The first offseason I ever did went through the Mike McCarthy quarterback school. It was me and Tom Arth and Tom Clements.
The Steelers host the Packers Week 8 in Pittsburgh with sports on Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, couple of showers and storms and lows in the upper 50s. For the weekend, a mix of sun and clouds, still some storms possible, highs in the mid-70s. Only in the 60s Monday, breezy, cooler, and more rain possible. It's 71 right now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Matt Miller, Milwaukee-based film critic. The film Sinners, the more distance I have from it, the more I liked it. Is that an Oscar film?
I think there is a love for what Sinners is doing, that a studio movie was this interesting and creative and thoughtful, but also entertaining. This is not the last you will hear about Sinners this year. I'd be shocked if it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, oil and gas industry expert Matt Randolph, also known as Mr. Global, will be here to talk about all things energy in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. And happy Friday. Hope your workday is ending as well as mine is, especially because I've got a fine guest that's going to be joining me for the next half hour. I've missed him. I know you all have on this fine program as well. His name's Dan Schaefer, the political editor for Civic Media. And there's just a wee bit of local news that happened this week. The biggest business in state politics, other than, you know, WISDEMS maybe electing a new chair over the weekend. Other than that, it's always about the budget and the dollars and the biennial budget. Apparently, conversations between the governor and Assembly and Senate Republicans breaking down within the last day or so. I'm so glad we've got you, Dan, to help us understand what's going on. Seemed like they had some good discussions going on. Do we know what happened, what the specific issues that led to the breakdown were?
You know, it's unclear what the exact specifics are. We're still learning some of the information. But I think big picture is that, you know, these budget negotiations have been going on behind closed doors between the governor's office and between, you know, Robin Voss, Devin LeMahieu, and other legislative leaders in the Republican-controlled state legislature. And Evers, you know, as he did at the beginning of the process, put forth his proposal. Republicans voted out more than 600 measures that he had in his budget, and then we're negotiating kind of the next path forward here. And in that process, you know, they heard from the listening sessions from the Joint Finance Committee. They heard top priorities from the governor in the budget on education funding, on childcare funding, on healthcare funding. And I think those in particular, as you know, Republicans were trying to strike a deal on an income tax cut, as we have this more than $4 billion surplus, I think Evers was coming to the table to negotiate what that kind of tax cut might look like if Republicans were willing to fund some measure of funding for K-12 education, for childcare, for healthcare. You know, and it seems like that it was a major sticking point and why those budget negotiations have now broken down, as late Wednesday, each of these camps put out press releases talking about, you know, the fact that these have broken down. And we are already past the normal time when things would be really advancing here. So it's going to be really interesting to see where things go from here, given that, you know, they've come to an impasse.
It's fascinating to me, Dan, because I view, you know, Milwaukee as a microcosm for the state and the state as a microcosm for the country. And it's not missed on, for me anyways, that it appears that there are some factions within the state MAGA regime, right? That there are folks that I would guess, all else being equal, especially if the governor's willing to meet them on some of their tax cut priorities, even for groups that the governor may not think need tax cuts, that they're willing to engage in more bipartisan cooperation and consensus building, maybe even give a little to get a little. But there are clear MAGA regime factions within the party of the right here in the state that simply aren't willing to do that. In other words, that we're seeing a bit of the infighting that Mike Johnson has barely been able to pull together in the narrowest of margins, one vote on the big brutal bill at the federal level. Are you hearing and seeing some of those similar kind of within the tent of the MAGA regime here in Wisconsin, some infighting there, and that's what's making progress and additional bipartisanship with the governor's office impossible?
I certainly think that's part of it. And I do think there's also a piece of this that is looking ahead to 2026, because given that we have, you know, we're under new maps, new fairer maps, I think a lot of the Republican state representatives and particularly state senators in closely contested districts are going to have to defend these votes that they are making right here, right now on the state budget. So Howard Markline, the co-chair right. of the Joint Finance Committee, he serves in a district that has not been up under new maps, and his district was carried by Kamala Harris last year and by Susan Crawford this spring. So it stands to reason that Markline, if he chooses to run again, and he's 70 years old, so who knows, if he chooses to run again, he's going to have to defend some pretty difficult votes on making if he denies investments in K-12 schools, in continuing child care counts, as there are potential layoffs here, and funding things in the UW system. Those are three of the priorities that the governor put in his press release about these budget negotiations being broken down.
Yeah, it's really, again, you look at the topic areas where it seems you've got what I'm going to just call the very extreme MAGA fringe that aren't in competitive districts, that simply can dig their heels in. They face no meaningful re-election challengers. They just waltz right into their re-elections. And so they have very low incentive to try to reach bipartisanship, to try to modulate their positions. And yet, what the governor's been asking for in the budget on these topic areas does not seem like it would be that hard for even the most diehard Republican, at least in the more traditional sense, to get behind it. These are high ROI investments, meaning for every tax dollar that we put in, taxpayers actually reap a positive return on a lot of this. Specifically, when you look at education, it was not only trying to especially help more rural school districts with their funding crises, and it's a funding crisis, not about let's build a big new fancy library or school. It's, do we have enough to pay our teachers, our social services, our mental health professionals, our teachers' aides in classrooms? It's basic operating budget stuff in a lot of rural districts. Again, we've seen an explosion in the school referendum where people are being forced to, is my school district going to have enough money? Or do I have to vote to raise my own property taxes? That seems to be a gimme. We know that the ROI on dollars spent in K-12 education provide much more economic benefit to taxpayers than it costs. And yet, that's what they're saying they won't support as we sit on a $4-plus billion surplus. You look at the university system, the crown jewel, the thing that I think for many Wisconsinites, whether or not you attended one of Wisconsin's universities or attended college or university at all, was a great source of pride. They're barely able to keep some campuses open. This all 10 years before we hit a massive demographic crunch. And of course, that education funding all happening, that debate here in the biennial budget happening with the shadow of these disastrous attempts by Trump to shut down the federal Department of Education. The First Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday rejecting a request from the Trump administration to basically reinstitute their mass layoffs in the DOE, that working its way through the federal courts. But do Republicans, does the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin, focusing just on education, are they talking at all about, well, if Trump shuts down the Department of Education and funding sources and the grant programs are all splintered and it's harder for school districts to get money, well, here's our plan on how to address that. Anybody talking in those ways at all from the MAGA regime?
No, it seems like they are almost going out of their way not to talk about this and not to talk about the implications of what the big brutal bill would be on this. And in addition to education, healthcare. I mean, Medicaid expand. Wisconsin is the only state in the Midwest that has not yet expanded Medicaid. And, you know, I think there was a press conference this week talking, somebody asked about the implications of this and whether Republican leadership are worried about it. And they kind of just said no to that, and which is really frightening for what this might mean, you know, as things continue to kind of roll downhill and we're downstream from a lot of those decisions being made at the federal level. And it just does not seem like legislative Republicans are prepared to take any measures in this state budget to address what's coming from the federal budget. And I also want to make a point on the what you were saying on K-12 schools as well. You know, Democratic State Representative Robin Vining put out a statistic earlier this week or last week saying that I think it was 96 out of 99 districts in the state assembly have seen school referendums happen in those districts. So it is not an isolated problem to Democratic corners of the state. It is every part of the state that has met this funding crunch. And so it is incumbent on every legislator to address it. And clearly they are not doing so.
And I've made this point a number of times. The boondoggle here is especially problematic. And by boondoggle, I mean the sort of denial of what's happening here on Earth One by the MAGA regime in the state is especially pernicious for rural school districts. And it's simply because the smaller your school district is, there are fewer places to cut, if you will. You do not benefit from the largesse or the economies of scale, if you will, that larger, frankly, more urban, more populous school districts have. If you only have, to put it really plainly, if your school district only employs, say, 100 people, and I'm just making up these numbers, and you have to have an operating budget cut because you don't have enough funding coming from the state, fewer places to look for those operating budget cuts, whereas a district that employs 5,000, oh, well, we can maybe, you know, juice the vacancy and turnover rates and make and just kind of make the budget work. The same simply isn't true, having been someone who cut a larger government budget year after year after year for nearly 8 years at Milwaukee County. I know well how that works to try to make the numbers work. Education, we've pointed out the problems there, head in the sand from the MAGA regime in the state. Same thing when it comes to Medicaid, head in the sand when it comes to the MAGA regime in the state. Childcare, those cuts aren't coming from the feds. They're coming from the MAGA regime. They're making the cut here. And again, it's sort of, it belies what the reality is for working middle class folks and folks that aspire to be maybe in the top 10% here in the state. They still need affordable childcare. None of this is going to work well for regular people in Wisconsin, Dan. What's their excuse? Is there an explainer that they're providing people, or is it just, well, we don't want to do that?
Yeah, again, I think they're really trying to evade this. And so often when it comes to, you know, any type of public benefit type of program, they will say that, you know, this is welfare and we want to cut the size of government. We want to cut this and that and whatever. But I think it's important to recognize that the Child Care Counts program in Wisconsin has been a remarkably successful one. It was set up as a pilot program during, you know, in accepting federal COVID dollars to see if this would work. Well, it worked. It worked really well. It won a, you know, award. It was honored by the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Right. It raised wages for providers. It kept centers open. It kept costs down for families. I'm a father of young children. This has been a big deal to people I know. So if they are not going to fund childcare, and we fund childcare at such a low level in this state and in this country, it's going to be a real problem for a lot of people.
We're going to talk a little bit more about education, albeit from a different angle. I always assume school superintendents pretty much had their arms around the Wisconsin public meetings or open meetings law. Turns out maybe that's a faulty assumption. We're going to discuss that next with my friend and yours, Dan Shaver, political editor, creator of the Recombobulation Area, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just...
Eagle 1490 AM. Summer. It's our Scotty Summer statewide text to win contest on your local Civic Media radio station. For a complete list of contest rules, log on civicmedia.us/contest-terms.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Matt Nair on air.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor.
Remember the film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? A driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, you're going the wrong way. And Candy and Steve Martin go, ha, 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 how do they know where we're headed? Congress and the administration are saying, this is what we're going to do for our budget. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
Matt Nair on air weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Positive psychology coach Kira Sabin, it is great to have you back.
I love the idea of self-help, but there's also something called community help. We have become so divided, we've forgotten that our neighbor is really nice and has and makes great cookies and probably has the same concerns on a daily basis that you do. I think that we think things have changed, and I think we're just have stopped talking to each other.
Catch the Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Thank goodness, everybody. It's after the 5 o'clock hour on Friday. Hopefully you're cracking open a cold one and enjoying some beautiful Wisconsin short summer weather. I call it short summer weather because maybe it's 90 days or so. But please hope you have a great weekend, everybody. We're here to start it out right with my good friend and yours, Dan Shaver, our political editor here at Civic Media and friend of the Maggie Dawn Show and a friend of each and every one of you. We've been talking about what I'm just going to call the big brutal budget cuts local version. We've got the big brutal bill in DC. We got the big brutal budget cuts from the MAGA regime here in the state. But there's a relationship to a bit that broke in local news over the last couple of days, Dan. I wonder if you could set this up. Our colleagues at WTMJ broke this. They had sent a reporter to the St. Francis School Board meeting. Tell us what happened next, because boy, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, pretty remarkable case here unfolding with TMJ4, the TV network in southeastern Wisconsin. Report that came out late Wednesday evening that TMJ4 is going to be taking legal action against the St. Francis School District Superintendent Deborah Kerr, who blocked TMJ4 from filming a public school board meeting earlier in the week. The video is pretty remarkable. It's clear that Kerr is going out of her way to make sure that, you know, a reporter showing up at a public meeting is not filming that public meeting. And I think it is also interesting to note that Kerr was the Republican-backed candidate for state superintendent in 2021, when she was the superintendent of the Brown Deer School District at the time. She's now at St. Francis. So I think she's going to be getting herself into some real legal hot water, because it is pretty clear she is violating the state's open records law on camera with a reporter.
Right, like on camera. There are so many things about this that I think are really remarkable. Having, you know, you and I, Dan, have been wrangling around in the open records and open meetings laws. You from the journalist side, myself from the chief legal officer side, and talking to my clients about how to manage open meetings and open records law. I was so shocked by how completely and totally ignorant Superintendent Kerr was of what the open meetings law requires, as if she was the first day on the job for the first time ever working in government. But no, this lady has been a superintendent and should understand Wisconsin's transparency laws extraordinarily well. And as you mentioned, Dan, she was not only a superintendent in a larger school district, but was also the GOP-backed candidate for the Department of Public Instruction superintendent. I am completely blown away. Like, what lawyer did Deb Kerr talk to? Because on the video, she's, well, I called my lawyer and you called yours. And your lawyer, if they know anything about open meetings, would have said, is it a publicly noticed meeting, Deb? Yeah, you can't kick reporters out if they want to record your public meeting. Would you, like, if somebody's going to sit there with a phone and record it, you're going to kick them out too? The same apply. It doesn't matter if they've got a huge professional camera. It's the most bizarre, completely ill-founded, and ultimately extraordinarily expensive gambit for the St. Francis School District, because I'm sure, as you well know, Dan, I think it was about two and a half years ago, a decision came down from the Wisconsin Supreme Court that said those that have to file a lawsuit under the open records or open meetings law, and they the lawsuit is the catalyst for that government agency to change what they're doing, the plaintiff in those suits presumably is going to be able to get their attorney's fees paid for. So TMJ, kudos for you, sitting pretty over there, our colleagues. They're not going to have to pay their lawyers, I don't think, in this case, because it's such a blatant violation. And to what end? I literally don't understand what the superintendent was concerned about. She made some statements about, my board members aren't expecting to be video record. I'm like, I don't care. You're in a public meeting. It means it can be. I don't get at all what was going on there. Was there some salacious piece of business on the agenda, Dan? Any insights into why Deb Kerr decided that this was the hill she was going to die on?
So I think part of the reason that the reporter from TMJ4 showed up at the school board meeting for this is because there was some news out of the St. Francis High School over the past couple of weeks. And another TMJ4 story says that St. Francis High School junior varsity baseball coach was, quote, released from all coaching responsibilities after being arrested by Milwaukee police. So I think there was a reason for, you know, reporters to show up at the very next school board meeting after this arrest to see if any parents would come forward, to see if any members of the school district would come forward to talk about what exactly happened here. Because there was a letter sent to parents by Deborah Kerr. So I think that's why they were there. But why they were trying to cover this up is a whole nother story. And now the cover up's going to end up looking a whole lot worse.
Yeah, the cover up's worse than the thing, as it always is. I mean, rule number one of politics. Here's the weird thing, though. Like, hey, Deb, if you're listening, you know, call me. I charge premium top dollar for my legal advice, but I guarantee you it'll actually be actionable legal advice. There's an exception to the open meetings law for sensitive personnel matters and other things that may involve minors to keep. So, like, she could have done this. Or if the item wasn't agendized, you could hold it. Like, there are a million different ways to address sensitivities about things like this. But ultimately, I don't get it, Deb. The public has a right to know. What you hiding? And by the way, why was your attitude so crappy? The thing that really blew my mind was that she was rude, dismissive, and downright disrespectful to the reporter. Turns out Deb, you're the one in the wrong. Get your checkbook out. I'm sure DMJ's lawyers will be coming for you. Thank you so much, Dan. We're getting Dan back into the regular cycle here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I appreciate him so much. Have a fabulous weekend, my friend. And don't go anywhere, folks, when we come back. We're going to have a little Ask Maggie for you next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Legislative Republicans and Governor Tony Evers have ended negotiations on the state budget. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
Budget negotiations between Governor Tony Evers and top Republicans have hit a wall. The GOP leaders said talks had reached an impasse despite what they called good faith negotiations. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux and Budget Committee Co-Chair Senator Howard Markline said taxpayers simply cannot afford the governor's spending priorities. In response, Evers said he kept his end of the bargain, backing tax cuts for the middle class and retirees, but Republicans wouldn't budge on his calls for child care, education, and funding the UW system. Wisconsin has the largest budget surplus on record, according to an analysis from the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum.
Legislators are trying to finalize the budget by the end of the month. 98 schools across Wisconsin received a DPI honor for achievement, progress, or impact for last school year. The schools of recognition include Arcadia Middle School, Independence Elementary School, and Wattiewaukee Center Junior High School. Schools eligible for the recognition must be receiving Title I federal funding, meet or exceed expectations on the school report card, and meet or exceed 95% test participation among all students. You can see the full list of schools receiving recognition on the DPI website. This week's state high school track and field championships will be held at UW-La Crosse Friday and Saturday. The event, which has been held in La Crosse since 1990, draws an average of nearly 20,000 attendees over the two-day event. According to city officials, the event provides a nearly $4 million economic impact to La Crosse. Also, Highway 16 is under construction, so visitors to the state meet are advised to take alternate routes. You can find more information, including participants, directions, and more on the WIAA's website. UW La Crosse and the WIAA have an agreement in place to keep the event in western Wisconsin through next year. Download the free Civic Media app now at civicmedia.us/app. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Actress Mia Sara is back after a 14-year hiatus. You might know her as Sloane Peterson from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yahoo Entertainment reports she was back on the red carpet at the premiere of The Life of Chuck, a sci-fi fantasy based on a Stephen King novel. Sara was last seen on the big screen in 2011 in Dorothy and the Witches of Oz. Sara says she is not officially out of retirement, but will always work if director Mike Flanagan asks her. I feel the same way. Here's some cool news on the heels of a really good documentary about Sly and the Family Stone. The Hulu documentary Sly Lives was insightful and a really fun watch. Now, 60 years after a concert recording, a new album will be released. According to Variety, The First Family, live at Winchester Cathedral, 1967, will be released this summer. The band's manager put the recordings in a vault shortly after the show decades ago. They were discovered in 2002. The new old material will be released July 18th on High Moon Records. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, couple of showers and storms and lows in the upper 50s. For the weekend, a mix of sun and clouds, still some storms possible, highs in the mid-70s. Only in the 60s Monday, breezy, cooler, and more rain possible. It's 71 right now.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
What if it smells terrible?
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off,
and give us a few bucks. Yeah.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwalbe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media Sports Authority Mike Clemens, actor Mark Unger, and it's a Bar Band Friday night with Rocker filling in for his Maxine co-host, Terry Barr.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday. It's 5:30. My name's Maggie, and it is time for Ask Maggie right here on the Maggie Don Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, where you, the listener, get to ask me damn near anything you want. You can submit your questions, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Please address them to Jamie, my senior producer. She filters them and then surprises me while I'm live on the air with all of you. Of both the baffling and the obscura, anything is welcome. Again, that is 855-752-4842. You can also always email your questions to askmaggie@civicmedia.us. Welcome back, Jamie. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Well, happy Friday. I love being able to say that. It's been a week.
It certainly has, my friend. It certainly has.
It has. It has definitely been a week. Now, we have some really great questions, and I was just going through the list, and some things that I feel like are, even though they came in maybe a few weeks ago, still pertain to the discussion. So I think we'll try to get to some of those. We'll get to some fun stuff. We've got a good mix of things that we're going to be talking about this week. So, Cal, without further ado, I think we need to roll that Ask Maggie intro.
It's time to get your questions answered, Wisconsin style. Welcome to Ask Maggie, a rapid-fire round from politics to pop culture. So buckle up, Buttercup. It's Ask Maggie, and we're about to take your questions at lightning speed.
I don't know how lightning speed.
Yeah,
I
was like,
here.
At lightning speed, unless I go off on a tangent or I just can't wrap it up. The intention that it is that it's lightning speed, and I'm on some sort of time limit, right?
Well, sometimes some of these questions require further discussion. It's fine.
That's fine.
It's lightning speed for us. Let's put it like that. And on a Friday, this feels lightning speed, quite honestly.
It does. Flooding the zone, Jamie.
Exactly. All right. So let's just jump in here, because I want to start with a question that actually came in a couple of weeks ago. And this is a great question. And this is going to allow you to talk about some of your incredible travels over the years. And this is actually from Jennifer in Romeoville. She wants to know that when you were in China, describe what aspect of China was most fascinating or surprising to you in a positive way. I loved this question, right? Because right now, in the talk of all the tariffs, there's this really negative image of a lot of things coming from the Asian countries. And so I loved this question, that we get to bring a little positivity to the Asian culture and China. So I think, because I know you have some stories, so I think...
I always have stories.
So I think we should give her 60 seconds for this one, Cal, whenever you're ready.
Okay, so I was in China before the Olympics were in Beijing. So it was extraordinarily fascinating to be there as they were building the bird's nest and all of these incredible stadium facilities. The other thing that I just absolutely adored was the food and how incredibly kind people were. I did not have a single negative experience with any Chinese person that I interacted with there. Incredibly kind and welcoming. But by far, I may have talked about this on the air before, one of my favorite moments was I was there in the spring to like early summer period. Not a high season for tourists. Very few. But I wanted to see the Great Wall of China, so I went there, and it was a very cold, very kind of wet and blustery March day. And you go up, there's like these turrets almost as you ascend to the top of the wall. And as I was going up to the top of the wall, I ended up passing one Chinese family who was there. I was literally almost like the only person there. So at the top of the wall, in both directions, as far as my eye could see, I couldn't see another human being. But on my way up, I passed this Chinese family who were coming down, and they were very excited and interested to meet me. We did not speak each other's language. At the time, I had sort of longer blonde hair, which was a bit unusual, so I kind of stuck out. And the son, in hand gestures, asked me for a photo, and we took a couple photos together. And then he wrote his email down for me, which I was like, I don't know what to do with Chinese characters in an email. So I wrote mine down. And about, I think it was like a month or so after I had gotten home. So this was months and months after meeting these folks. I got an email from this young man with the pictures that we had taken of himself, me, and his parents on the Great Wall. And I just thought that was like the coolest thing, that someone, that he went to that extra effort. And they were, again, everyone that I met in China was extraordinarily kind and open and interested. I ate the most challenging thing I've ever eaten in my life there. I was at a business dinner, traditional Chinese dinner, at a circle table that has a big lazy Susan in the middle. Mm-hmm. River snails. I'm not going to describe it, but I ate river snails because they were served. And I eat a lot of different things, love food. Mm-hmm. I will never be eating river snails again. Mm. No, thank you. But I did eat them out of respect when I was there. But never, that was, it was, there's a mucusy element. I'll just eat it there.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. No.
One and done on the river snails for me.
Yeah, we won't put that in anybody's head going into a Friday, but no, I can about imagine. I will say this, I've never had the chance to travel to Asian countries, at least not yet. I actually had a chance a few years ago, I should say, but because of scheduling, it was not in the cards.
It's an investment. I mean, it takes forever, right? You're on a plane for a day and a half.
It does. And I've had the chance to travel to European countries over the years, a couple of different European countries. Going to an Asian country is definitely on the bucket list, though, because I think the culture is incredible. Now, the closest I've gotten to real authentic Asian food, though, is in Chinatown in New York City. Mm-hmm. And if you think that you're, no offense against the local restaurants down the street, right? The food is amazing. We all need a little bit of that in our life every now and then. No comparison. No comparison. Absolutely. So that's what I'm going to say. If you ever get the chance to travel to an Asian country, which I still want to do, or eat authentic Asian food, I would implore anybody to do so, minus the river snails.
My favorite, Peking duck. I mean, seeing the Forbidden City, the Emperor's Summer Palace, which I mean, I could talk about China forever. I was enchanted. Incredible. to say the least.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. My grandparents actually traveled to China probably about 12, 13 years ago now. It was bucket list items. Yeah. And they went with my aunt, a couple of my aunts and my uncles, and it was this whole big family thing that they did. I believe they went on some sort of tour, but I can't remember. But no, they were very impressed. They brought home a lot of jade from that trip too.
Yeah, my one uncle has a whole jade drawer. And bought a bunch of pearls there too.
Yep. My one uncle was a jeweler. Part of my family owned a jewelry store for most of my life. And so obviously when he saw the jade that he could just purchase and then make into, pieces individualized for his customers, he was all about bringing home as much of it as he absolutely could. So yeah, that's as close
lower
as I've gotten to
back
Asia.
Then. Lower tariffs back then.
I think maybe they even went before 9/11 when traveling was even a little easier. It might have even been way before then. My timeline gets a little skewed once I get into the college, like later high school, early college days. So it might have even been way, way before that. But I know that they really immensely enjoyed their time there. So,
well, thanks to Jennifer and Romeoville. What a great question. What else?
Yeah,
you got
that was
for
a great question. Yeah.
All right, let's see. Oh, this is a good one. And I know you had a little bit of this conversation last hour with Gray and Joel as you were talking about cornhole, but Linda from Eau Claire, who listens to your show on The Tap, wants to know if you have any suggestions for a favorite summer beverage, Maggie. I think we better give her a minute on this one, too.
The Kel. Bevies? Ah, yes. Well, the bevies. I like a good gin and tonic. Personally, with some fresh lime. That is a delicious summer bevy. The all-year bevy, but especially good in the summer, a really good handmade margarita. That is delicious. I'm a big fan of that. What else do I have a go? I drink a lot of, like everybody does now, the hard seltzers. It's portable. It's in a can. It's boat-friendly. It's a good summer bevy. The hard seltzers, that's probably my go-to. Easy peasy.
Yeah, hard seltzers are always good. I also love like a fruity drink in the summer. Give me something with an umbrella in it and, you know, like a little skewer full of fresh fruit. I'm down. I'm always down.
Yeah, if I'm at a tiki bar, like I'm definitely going in for the blended, fun tiki drinks with fruits and umbrellas. Mm-hmm. But if it's a porch sit, a boat sit, a campfire sit.
Portable.
Yeah, then, like it in the can and the koozie. Gotta have, I have koozies legitimately. Everywhere. I have a stash of koozies in my car. I got a stash of koozies in the golf club bag. I got a stash of koozies in my purse. Like, do not leave home without the koozie, because the worst thing.
You never know.
Correct. And even if it's super cold outside, you still want a koozie because your can's cold and it's going to make your hand cold, and that's no good either. So hot or cold weather, the koozie is your friend.
Now, I just learned something. Are you a golfer?
I'm a terrible golfer. I enjoy the social aspect of it and the walking. And like, I would say out of, say, like 10 drives, I'll hit 1.5 decent ones.
Yeah.
So I like the scrambles out of, like the medium game or like 100 yard. I'll hit 6 out of 10 decently, and I can putt pretty consistently. So like, you put that together, especially in a scramble, it's good fun. But me doing 18 holes at Whispering Pines, that ain't happening. That's a five-hour outing. I used to caddy at Milwaukee Country Club. No, thank you.
Yeah.
That is a five-plus-hour outing because I'm chasing
balls. Let me tell you my last golf story, and this goes all the way back to high school. Now, I'm 47 years old, so you do the math, okay? That tells you my last golf outing. I was dating somebody in high school, and it was like a South Dakota 98 degree day with 95% humidity. The golf courses in South Dakota, people have no trees. There's not a tree in sight.
Like and Indiana.
Open, right? They're awful. And it was super sunny, and he decided he was going to golf with a buddy, and his buddy had his girlfriend along too. So we get into the cart and we're bored. We're bored. We're hot. It didn't have the money to rent the cart with the cover over the top.
Oh,
so
geez.
We're hot, just right? Like we are just miserable out there. So we decide we're going to take the golf cart for a little spin. We apparently found the one hill in all of South Dakota because we started chasing a gopher with the thing and we toppled it over. And so the golf cart was still running. The wheels were still going. And that was the last time, other than maybe a station event where, we were sponsoring a hole and I was giving away a t-shirt or two, that I've ever been on a golf course.
Well, Jamie, next time you should ask me to tell you about the time I got thrown off of a golf cart. Somebody had messed with the regulator, so we were going a little bit above safe speed. Took a turn, and boom! The inertia just kept me going in the direction that my
this won't turn into the stupid stuff we've done, because I have stories of racing Pinto cars in high school.
Oh boy,
we made our own tracks. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Safety first, Jamie. Stupid Maggie and Jamie tricks. That's got to be coming to a Civic Media Network show near you, Jamie. You have a great. Oh wait, you're gonna come back with me on the other side.
Sure.
I think we've got one more question. We're gonna try to sneak in.
Okay.
And then we'll wrap up the week on a positive note. Everybody, keep it locked right here. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Jamie Martinson, my senior producer. We got Cal on the board and each and every one of you. Remember, you can submit your questions at 855-752-4842 or askmaggie@civicmedia.us. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Escape to paradise this summer at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. Spacious accommodations, perfect for families or romantic getaways. Voted top 10 best water parks in the U.S., championship golf, the longest zip line in the area, and the number one steakhouse in Wisconsin. Book a Chula Vista Resort all-inclusive package now at 1-800-388-4782 or visit chulavistaresort.com. Your summer paradise awaits.
Medicare loses about $60 billion annually to fraud, errors, and abuse. June 2nd through the 8th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Learn more by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cows' milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant, 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of her cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Celebrating our dairy farmers with this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position, pregame to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody, and happy Friday to each and every one of you. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got my senior producer, Jamie Martinson, hanging out with me for a little bit longer because, Jamie, I think there was one question that you definitely wanted to ask me that we ran out of time for.
We did. Well, we started talking about the stupid things we did while we
were young. Yeah, we get distracted. Maggie and Jamie tricks.
Yep. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. This one actually comes to us from Steve, who texts in from Milwaukee. Thank you so much for constantly listening, Steve. He's one of our avid listeners. And he always comes up with really great questions, including this one. And he wanted to know your opinion, and he would love for you to actually dissect J.D. Vance's responses at the American Compass Gala that took place earlier this week. Your perspective from the economist point of view, because, and I've read some of the transcripts, Steve's not wrong here, it was a walking contradiction. So we'll give you 60 seconds to kind of dive into this one, Maggie, whenever you're ready, Cal.
Well, I literally have no idea what our dear friend Steve is talking about, which is good. I like it when the questions stump me. I'm not afraid to say I don't know, but it means I will go and find out as well. And this, ladies and gentlemen, you know I don't know what the questions are ahead of time because I would have looked that up. I do have some general thoughts on JD and the moment that we're in. Jamie, I think
this was right about maybe 2 months before the election. So I'm guessing September-ish. Mm-hmm. We had on a reporter from Mother Jones, and I'm going to blank on her name, but she had done reporting about the Theo Bros and the Tech Bros and a guy named Curtis Yarvin. Curtis is Yarvin. I think it's Yarvin, yeah. Or Yarvis. I get it. Yarvin. Curtis Yarvin. In any case, what I want to say to Steve is I'll go check out what Vance had to say and then, you know, brutally make fun of all of the contradictions therein. But what occurs to me when we think about J.D. Vance and why does he hold the positions that he holds, many of them highly contradictory. The present moment, though it appears to be about Donald Trump, isn't really about Donald Trump. It's really about the top 0.01% in this country basically seizing control of not just the Republican Party, which is now not recognizable in any way, shape, or form to the Republican Party of 15 years ago, but trying to assert and seize control over not just government as a concept, but the very democratic process that we choose to elect our governmental leaders. And they're doing it through massive corrupt campaign donations. You know, there's a big lawsuit going on in New York State brought by, I believe the entity is called Smart Elections, challenging some weird looking results. This is a very bizarre alliance of basically tech billionaires and hedge fund billionaires. You're thinking like the Sam Altmans, the Peter Thiels of this world, of course, our billionaire overlord Elon Musk, all of them attempting effectively a coup in the United States, but through actual democratic elections by controlling the flow of information, creating the information sewer. And what do they want? What are they sort of conjuring up? Well, go read over the weekend, everybody, or maybe save it until Monday because it's kind of depressing, some of the things that Curtis Yarvin has said and what he espouses. And basically it's, we don't need democracy anymore. What we need is authoritarian, like a CEO or a couple of CEOs that just controls all of government. And they're anticipating what AI is going to bring. And it's frankly pretty dystopic. They're looking at kind of like, what is the master race of the best among us? And how does that combine with AI? And how do the rest of us get basically like managed and controlled? It's really scary stuff. And J.D. Vance is basically an acolyte and the bag man for all of those different weirdly now aligned groups, the tech bros and the Theo bros. So it's not really about Trump and it's not really about J.D. Vance. They're just useful tools for these billionaires, the 0.01% that are trying, I think, to control our government and by extension, control the information that gets to the general public so that they can control our government. It's pretty scary stuff. J.D. Vance, that dude is a slick customer, Jamie. Yeah. Slick customer. Yes. Very smart guy. He's able to wordsmith with the best of them, but make no mistake, it's about letting the very few actually control the many.
And I think that's one thing that people forget. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who are terrified of what Trump is bringing to the United States, but I kind of look at it where I'm a little bit more afraid of the J.D. Vances and the theocracy and those tech bros out there that have decided that they want a say in what happens.
That they should pick the winners and losers, and they should be able to control the losers. And again, there's going to be a whole lot of us losers and very, very, very few of those winners. And they're mostly going to look like middle-aged white guys. Just saying. That's part of the program here that we've got going on.
All going to end like Trump and Musk, though, because they seem to be divorcing rapidly.
I would don't be distracted from what's really going on.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the big piece here. Trump is distraction. Yep. The culture wars, distraction. Yes. What's really happening here is revolution. And we all would do well to pay attention. Listen, it ain't going to be revolution. It's going to be celebration of community this Sunday. It is the Milwaukee yes. Pride Parade. I am going to be there. A bunch of folks from Civic Media are going to be there, including Dan Schaefer, who you heard from earlier. Please come out and join us. Look for Civic Media in the parade. Say hello. First step off is at 2 p.m. The entirety of Milwaukee is going to be there. It is always joyous. It always fills me with hope and promise, even in these challenging times. Thanks to you. Thanks to Jamie. Thanks to Cal on the board. Have a really great and happy, safe weekend. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Kilmar Abrego-Garcia is back in the U.S. The Maryland man the Trump administration admits was mistakenly sent to a prison in El Salvador will now face federal charges related to human trafficking here in the U.S. ABC's Catherine Falder says a grand jury in Tennessee indicted him.
In terms of next steps here, typically you would land on U.S. soil, which the attorney general noted that he has, and you would have a hearing, a first appearance. So that's what we're waiting for. Will that happen? Will Abrego-Garcia make an appearance in a U.S. federal courthouse? We will have to see.
Grant Hardin, a former Arkansas police chief convicted of murder and rape who escaped from a prison last month, has been captured. Authorities say about a mile and a half away from the prison grounds. Officials say the so-called devil of the Ozarks was identified through fingerprint analysis. After a barrage of social media posts yesterday, President Trump and Elon Musk have cooled their public feud, sparked by Musk's opposition to the budget bill. This is ABC News.